Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, continuing a rousing discussion of the beneficiary's perspective in estate planning.
It is rousing, isn't it? It's
rousing.
Amazing.
Well, now we're getting into something do you love to talk about taxes, implications in the trust?
If you've tuned in this morning or this afternoon and you're about ready to get an earful of taxes, and yeah, it really does kind of geek me out, so...
Well, this is an important part of the trust and how the trust can help with tax issues.
Yes,
because there's lots of different tax implications. You want to pay as little tax as possible, and you can accomplish that with proper planning.
You can.
Paul's going to talk about that this week. We've been talking last few shows about the beneficiary's perspective in estate planning, and last time we talked about how you close an estate and then you maybe have three children and how they can each have their own trust then.
Right.
You called it a liberal trust. And pretty interesting stuff. So why don't you get us going for today?
Yeah, so we're still going to be looking at the beneficiary's perspective and what does it mean to inherit something and it go to a trust. So we have one trust document, and the creators, the trust makers, the client have created that document. And inside that document are instructions. Those instructions say, hey, if something ever happens to me, please take care of me with my own money. So I would like to be my first beneficiary. If you're married, then you go, make sure that my spouse is well taken care of. And I want to make sure that everything that we've developed, everything that we've been given is usable by me and by my spouse should I be the first to die. So we always take care of a spouse first. Then the spouse dies in the storyline, and that same document then breaks up into three different trusts. So those are called the beneficiary trust, the inherited trust shares. And in your story, you gave us three kids, so we're mm-hmm. still following that line. Mm-hmm. If you had a charity and you said, I want to have the charity receive a distribution instead of just one lump sum. Let's say we set aside $50,000 for charity. And let's say it was going to your church. And instead of you saying, I want to have my church just receive $50,000, you say, I want the charity to receive $5,000 a year for an extended charitable giving. So in other words, we'd create a 10-year trust for the charity. Well, that could be the fourth trust if you want, because you want to hold money and give it to somebody for a longer period of time instead of just writing them a check. That may be appropriate, and maybe it's not. So trusts are typically utilized to hold assets for the benefit of an individual or charity for a longer period of time. And what we talked about is last week, and you can go to legacyandfaith.com, and there's past podcasts there, so you can get all of our past podcasts concerning the beneficiary's perspective of inheriting through a trust. So a beneficiary can have a lot of access and a lot of control, but there's great protections around an inherited trust. So if they were going to get divorced, would you want the walking away spouse to have access to an inheritance? Now, there's a presumption in law that it's not attachable, but trust me, that presumption can be worn down very quickly. It can be tarnished very quickly. So if they had a creditor, if they had to go through bankruptcy, had a catastrophic health issue, these are the things that can be protected. But now, so all those are past podcasts. So now we're going to talk about what are the tax consequences when we receive money in an inherited trust. So there are two types of estate tax that I want to briefly mention here, which is first, there is a federal estate tax. And then the second one is there is a Washington state estate tax. Now, these are constantly moving their value. So understand this, that an estate tax means that we value everything that someone has. So when you die, we value everything that you have. We come up with a full number. And if it is over a specific number, the federal is very high. Washington state is much lower. But if we break that threshold of how much you have, then an estate tax is due and the estate pays it. Mm-hmm. Then we are left with everything else. But that is not the tax that we're going to talk about. There's other podcasts concerning that. If you are concerned with estate taxes, please give us a call. We'll be glad to sit down and walk you through that journey. So for today, what does it mean for a beneficiary to receive taxes in their trust? And what are the consequences of holding money in a trust instead of a beneficiary receiving the inheritance in their personal name and them just holding the inheritance in an individual account or, in their own individual name. So there are some differences between these, and I just wanted to take a show to talk about the advantages, actually, of having assets held in a trust for tax purposes. So let's get into it, shall we?
Okay.
Number one, if you were to Google trust taxes, you are going to see a lot of different things come up before you. So let's talk about the foundation of taxes in a trust. Trusts have similar brackets as we do as individuals. So in other words, it starts at a 10% level, moves to a 20%. Goes up to a 22.5, then a 25, 27.5, into 33, into 37. So all those brackets exist in our personal tax return. The more money I make, the more exposure to tax I have each and every year. And we're talking about that a trust, because it is deemed to be an individual by IRS standards, a separate individual, it needs to file a separate tax return every year. So it needs to file a 1041 form. Then the 1041 form gives a tax consequence that goes down to the beneficiary's 1040. So when we inherit in a trust, the trust is linked to the beneficiary and the taxes work together. They're in lockstep with each other. So the first thing about inheriting in a trust is that there is what we call a compressed tax rate. So for example, in a compressed tax rate, the maximum amount of income per year, because we're talking about income taxes now, each year someone has to pay income tax, and a trust, therefore, every year has to pay income tax just like any person does. So there's no difference in the tax structure for that. However, the compressed tax rate is much lower. So I think the number is $13,600. I guess I could have just Googled it and had an exact number for the radio show, but I didn't. That's off the top of my head. So that may not be the perfect number. So if someone, if a trust has more than $13,600, then everything beyond that number is going to be taxed at 37%. So that's a very low threshold of income. To match that, an individual has to make over $250,000. So we're talking $250,000 all the way down to $13,600. Okay. So then how in the world could I ever claim that a trust could have tax benefits if there's such a disparity with the initial taxing system? Well, because fortunately, this is what I do. And so when you get very focused, you learn some tax advantages. They're not tax tricks. They're nowhere near illegal. The tax code tells us how to operate in tax law, and we use that to our advantage. And so that's a good thing. The trust then is in compressed rates. So many of the trusts that I design, and by the way, this is not how most trusts are designed. So you need to be very cautious with listening to this show, then going to another attorney thinking that you are developing this type of a trust, because most trusts do not operate like this. They are more rudimentary, the ones that I review. And if we leave assets in a trust, they would be exposed to the compressed tax rates. And so there would not be a tax advantage. It would actually be a tax detriment for a standard trust. However, there are ways that we can actually get tax advantage. So the first thing that we can always do is that if we hit that threshold in a trust, we can simply distribute the excess income if the trust allows it. So remember, if a trust is for a special needs beneficiary, we actually would not want to distribute it because we're trying to protect somebody from having too much money and thereby disqualifying them from governmental support, from governmental programs. In that case, because there is a high need or the value of the creator or the purpose of the trust is to protect somebody, then taxes are secondary. Unfortunately, we're going to get taxed at a higher rate in that trust. But you know what? That is going to be okay. So as much as I like to maneuver tax advantages and try to work them into my trust, in a special needs trust, for example, we would have far less capacity in maneuvering those advantages because the purpose of the trust is to protect the beneficiary. It's not to ensure tax benefits to the beneficiary. Now, can we do some of these tricks and still not disqualify somebody? Yes, but not very many because, again, the main purpose is to protect the beneficiary. So not everything is about taxes. We don't let the tail on the dog wag the dog. So therefore, taxes, if we imagine that the taxes are the tail, we can't do everything just to accomplish tax purposes. We have to have purpose and strategy from the creator's point of view as the primary objective. Then when tax law fits within that objective, now that's great. But sometimes it just doesn't. As an example, when we have a special needs beneficiary. So right now where we're at is we have a trust. We're talking about taxes today because who doesn't get excited about talking about taxes? And how do we work in, from a beneficiary's perspective, tax advantages? Sometimes we cannot because it would thwart the purpose. Other times we can, and when we come back from break, we'll pick up a few other ideas other than just distribute out the rest of the income to the beneficiary.
Okay, talking about the beneficiary's perspective in estate planning this week, an interesting discussion. And if you would like to find out more about Paul's services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. There's upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. Legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland this week, looking at the beneficiary's perspective in estate planning and protecting that beneficiary from taxes or getting too much tax. And there's ways to accomplish that with proper planning. And we're continuing this look right now.
Yeah, and I know this tends to be a little more of a dry topic here today. I apologize. I wish there was a way I could make taxes funny, but it really is not possible. So, but it is a very, very important discussion because we have an estate tax, and good planning will help mitigate or even fully resolve that. That's not the tax we're talking about today. We're talking about the advantages of holding an inheritance in a trust, and what does that look like? So we've established that trust taxes as a starting point tend to be worse. But we can overcome that by saying if there is going to be a bad income tax consequence in the trust, the beneficiary can take more. Now, here's the sad part of the reality of everything is that most beneficiaries take money from their trust. And so whenever they take a distribution, the tax consequence follows that distribution. So most of the time, beneficiaries are taking more than what the income that the trust produced. So for example, if a trust produced $10,000 of income in a given year, and that would be through interest and dividends and royalties, capital gains are not considered income. They can be, but so let's say there's $10,000. Most beneficiaries are going to take more than $10,000 a year out of their trust. So therefore, the income would follow the distributions because the beneficiary took more than the income tax consequence. So what happens if we have a really responsible beneficiary and they go, that's my savings account, I don't want to take it? Well, now we come up against a ceiling where the trust says, this is going to be a bad result. Can we get money to you? So the beneficiary can either say, yep, I'll take anything that is above the threshold for bad taxes. I'll just take that to myself and I'll reinvest it in my own personal stuff. Or the beneficiary can go, no, I really want to leave it there. Are there other opportunities? And the answer is absolutely there are other opportunities. So a majority of my trusts give beneficiaries what is called a demand right. And that means that they can demand the interest. The IRS says that even if you hold the right to demand that the income is given to you, I think I said interest, I meant to say a demand right over the income, my apology. When that demand right is there, the IRS says whether or not you use it is irrelevant. Just because you have the right to take the income is yours. So our trusts are far friendlier for tax purposes. What does that look like? It means that when we hit the threshold in taxes, the responsibility to pay the tax goes to the beneficiary personally. Well, that doesn't sound like a good deal. Well, it actually is, because what we're doing is we're moving the income tax from a 37% tax bracket back to the beneficiaries, typically 20 to 25% tax bracket. So we have saved taxes on anything over that $13,600. So we've moved the tax burden to the beneficiary. Now, the beneficiary may say, it's okay. I'm financially fine. I'll just pay the extra tax. It's no big deal because I'm looking at my trust as a wealth generation mechanism. I'm looking at it to leave it for my children. I'm looking at it for generational purposes, and I want to leave as much as possible there. So that could be a good thing. Then, or if a beneficiary says, I'll take the tax consequence, but I would really like a little bit to pay that. So in other words, I don't want to be put in a worse position. So oftentimes, there's a authority that says, hey, if you're going to pay a tax bill on behalf of the trust, just let us know what that extra amount was and we'll get you the money. We'll make you a whole beneficiary. Don't worry about it. So there's a lot of power and control in the hands of the beneficiary. And this is a good thing because, again, when we talk about leaving a trust, most clients do not come in heavy-handed. There are times when we need to, such as the special needs trust example. We want to give as much opportunities to the beneficiary to manage those investments and the tax consequences coming to them. And with a trust, because we've used lower tax brackets in the trust, there's a tax savings overall to the beneficiary by utilizing the trust. So we have, on an annual basis, we've overall saved a small amount of taxes, not a massive amount. But there is a savings when it's properly designed. Now, there's a couple places where income can go out of control. We've talked about IRAs in past shows. So if an inherited IRA comes to the trust, that's where the income to the beneficiary would be far more. So let's say someone left a $500,000 IRA in a trust share. We only have 10 years to unwind that IRA now under current tax law. That doesn't matter whether it's left in a trust or whether we gave it to the beneficiary. It's the same rule. So number one, we have not put the beneficiary in a worse position by having it be held in the trust.
Let me ask a question then. The IRA, you say it's not in the trust originally, but now it is?
Yes, correct. It's
what,
held by the owner, by the one who created it.
Okay.
The owner dies. Now
it's changed to owner's trust name.
Yes, that's right. The beneficiary says, give it to my trust when I die. Okay. So now it gets to the trust. Okay. So from a beneficiary perspective, we have not harmed the beneficiary. The same tax law applies.
Okay.
For a special needs, because I've talked about that a couple times, they would get a lifetime stretch out. So we could hold that for a lifetime for someone who is disabled. But for a healthy beneficiary, responsible beneficiary, we have to unwind that in 10 years. That adds $50,000. So my example is $500,000. A 10-year span is that we want to unwind that in 10 years. So we take $50,000 that year. So the tax consequences spread out over the 10 years. And that's additional $50,000 of income to the trust. Not a problem. We would let that slip out and go to the beneficiary's 1040. That's not a problem because the beneficiary could either ask for money to pay that additional tax, or they can say, I'm fine, I have enough money, I'll cover the tax myself. And what if we had left the beneficiary that in their hands? They would have to pay the whole tax. They would have no option to have that money and the increase of it left in the trust.
Whole tax
and
on $500,000?
On the 50, on the annual distribution.
Okay.
So the trust is actually a better instrument because it gives options to a beneficiary. If we give it to the beneficiary, they are without options. They must follow the simple tax rule. We are left without any options whatsoever. So for people out there who go, I don't want a trust because I don't want to put in rules. Well, then you actually want a trust because it is the most flexible instrument and the most options given to a beneficiary. They can take the money out. They can leave the money in. They can have the trust pay the taxes, or they can pay the taxes, or they can split up the taxes between the two. If your mentality is, I don't want to leave any strings, so I'm just going to give it to them, you have just forced your beneficiary to take the money. So actually, you're doing exactly the opposite of what you say you want to do, which is, I don't want any strings. Good, then use a trust, because it gives all of the control back to the beneficiary. If you force the beneficiary to take the IRA, you have just demanded something to the beneficiary, you have pigeonholed them, you have just done exactly what you said you don't want to do, which is you have controlled the estate plan for the beneficiary. So actually, setting up a trust is giving the freedom that you so desperately want to give to a beneficiary. You don't want to pull strings, then use a trust. If you want to force a beneficiary to do something that you want, then leave it as a transfer on death. Or, by the way, yes, we can create a trust with boundaries because a beneficiary needs assistance. Okay. So annuities. Annuities are another asset that have strong tax results. Annuities, specifically annuities with investment money instead of your IRA money or your tax-deferred money, there is a tax consequence that few financial advisors talk to their clients about, which is you take after-tax money, put it into an annuity, and it just became taxable again. So an annuity must be unwound in 5 years. So therefore, we can hold an annuity, and that acts like an IRA as well, but a shorter span, which is that when we unwind it, it is income to the beneficiary for the gain. The principal is returned back, so it does operate a little bit differently than an IRA, because all of the money is taxed in an IRA, but only the increase, only the gains are taxed in an annuity. However, It is income. It is not capital gains like other investments are. And there's no step up in basis, so there's no tax advantage at death by holding an annuity. So annuities are a tricky little thing in estate planning, and we need to make sure that those are also pointed to the trust so that we can unwind it properly and get the best tax advantage again to the beneficiary. If you just leave them on as a beneficiary, bad tax consequences through annuities. Trusts are, again, more flexible of an instrument. If you really don't want to control your beneficiaries, you need to use a trust.
Okay, very interesting discussion. A little complicated. That's why maybe you need some help from an estate planner like Paul Grant. People are intrigued by your approach. How do they get in touch with you for more information, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and we would love to hear from you at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.